Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm thrilled to have a very courageous and unusual guest. Her name is Helen Luttrell, and she's written a mesmerizing new book called Rachel's Eyes. This is a true story about her daughter, Marissa, and her odd college roommate named Rachel. They were two young women who didn't fit in. One was legally blind, needing assistance, and the other had no history and a strange diet and lots of unanswered questions. Marissa's story invites us to expand our vision, to see the world and ultimately the universe through the eyes of a blind girl, her mother, and most strangely, through Rachel's eyes. So let's welcome the author and mother, Helen Luttrell, to the show and find out how she's doing. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me tonight.
Oh, Helen, you know, when I was reading your book, I got goosebumps. I cried. I laughed. I was moved. It was a mesmerizing experience. It's the best book I've written. I wish I could have written it. The best book I've read in a long time.
Oh, thank you. You know, so many people have told me that they have been moved to tears by it, but they laughed too. But
yeah.
Mostly, you know, they were very moved.
Oh, yes. And, you know, there's some very funny experiences in it. But for our audience, because, you know, probably most people haven't read it yet, hopefully they will read it. Let's go back a little bit and get some background on you and how you decided to tell this very strange story about your daughter Marissa and her roommate Rachel, who is a young woman believed to be a human-alien hybrid.
Okay. Well, I am semi-retired now, and I have a home-based business with medical transcription, and I live in a small town in southern Oregon, way out in the country. But since a really young age, maybe 5 or 6, I've seen lights in the sky, and somehow I knew they were ships carrying visitors from far away.
Uh-huh.
And even though I was really strongly discouraged from talking about that, I kept right on anyway because I knew what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Then after my daughter's death in 1990, I decided the story needed to be made public. She and I had talked about it several times, but we just never got around to doing anything. But after she had passed, I decided that the story was going to be told.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad you told it. You know, it's a story that I think a lot of people share, and I don't think that the enormity or the complexity has really come to the surface of our awareness yet. It's starting to, but, you know, it takes courageous people like yourself to really, you know, bring it out. And it also takes some courage because there are some who don't want these stories to get out. Isn't that true?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And there is so much stigma associated with talking about experiences similar to this, or even if you've just maybe had a sighting of a UFO,
mm-hmm.
You're afraid that your friends are going to drop you. And people have lost their jobs over talking about something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, I knew I was going to lose my job anyway for another reason, so I didn't really have any problems there. But actually, after the book came out, a lot of people contacted me and told me their stories. They felt somehow safe talking to me, I guess. And it's amazing how many people have had similar experiences.
Mm-hmm. There's another aspect of your life that I think a lot of the audience will identify with, and that was when the book opens, we're really brought into Marissa's life when she's ready to run away from home.
Right.
You were in a very horrible, abusive relationship with an alcoholic husband for a long time, and the way that you wrote that was just so... I mean, I could relate very well because I had an alcoholic father, And, you know, I could feel what was going on there. But Marissa runs away, and you didn't know that, did you, when she left?
No, I didn't. I found out a few hours afterwards.
But when
I had to have do an errand early in the morning on one Saturday, and when I got back, she was gone, and there was a note there saying that she had left, but I had no idea where she was.
Now, there's a really, I think it's a funny story. I mean, it's not really funny, but do you mind sharing with the audience what you were going to do to your husband when you told him about her leaving?
Well, yes. Actually, I was going to drive him out to a levee, and I had to pick him up from a meeting that he had gone to, and I was going to suggest afterwards that we just take a little drive because it was a nice, pleasant day, and we could just sit out there and then maybe talk. And so we did go out there, but I had prepared myself with his police revolver and a 357 Magnum, and I really did know how to use it, too, because he insisted that I learn how to shoot it. And so anyway, I was going to take him out there and shoot him and throw him in the river. And
I think that's funny.
And it is, you know, it is funny when I look back on it, but it was so such a horrible part of the time in my life.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking straight, I guess, because I suppose I would have gotten into a lot of trouble. Well, I would have. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know where to turn, and there had been no help for me. I asked for help from religious people, and they told me, just go home and mend my ways because I must be doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't handle the physical and emotional abuse any longer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was pretty nasty.
Yes, he was.
So you did something very clever, and instead of shooting him, you kind of gave him an option. You kind of pretended that you had the gun and that he could either accept your terms and get a divorce. You'd help him get his new job in the police department. He was going for an interview.
Right.
Or you could just kill him right there.
Yes, that was his options, and he took the wise choice.
Yeah.
And I went along with it because I thought that was just the best way to solve the whole problem.
Yes. Well, fortunately, you must have learned something of finesse because you did go through with it. You went through the interview with him, and I thought your description of the the police sergeant, or the one in control there, was hilarious.
And the three toads on a plank or something like that I said, the review committee.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was what they made me think of. But actually, they were really nice people because they gave him the job and took him off my hands.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to get him into trouble, so I won't delve too deeply into that aspect.
No, that may be far enough on that.
Yeah. So then, so she had moved out, and when was the next time you heard from her, and when did you find out about her roommate at college? She moved in with, a girl moved in with her.
Right. I think it was about 3 weeks later that I heard from her, and her counselor at school at the junior college had helped her to find an apartment that she could afford and had, in fact, loaned her some money to, pay the deposit and get herself in.
Mm.
And it was just 2 or 3 days later, very, very short time interval, before Rachel showed up at the same counselor's office looking for a roommate, too.
Mm.
And it, at the time, I thought it was just coincidence, but in retrospect, I don't think so at all.
No, it doesn't seem that way, does it?
It was just way too much of a synchronicity there.
Oh, absolutely. And she was with her father, who was an Air Force colonel, is that right?
Yes.
What can you tell us about him and, what your first, and also in relation to what Marissa said about her roommate, when you first started to wonder if there was something strange going on?
Well, Marissa was telling me quite often, because we would talk on the phone or Well, first, we would talk on the phone. And she would tell me about Rachel's strange mannerisms, how she spoke in a very mechanical manner. She had no inflections to her voice. And what was really unusual was the food that she had to eat. She couldn't eat the regular food as my daughter did. Her food arrived outside the apartment in little boxes. It would be like a case of it. In little boxes like frozen peas and carrots and stuff used to come in, little white boxes. And her drinking liquid was not regular water. She couldn't drink water or sodas or the iced tea or anything like that. It looked like water in great big jugs. But this was also delivered about the same time as the little boxes of this green substance that appeared to be like a mashed up spinach or something. It was a horrid looking green substance. But that was the only thing that she could eat, and this liquid in the jugs was all that she could drink.
And now, the boxes didn't say bird's eye, and the liquid didn't say Alhambra, right?
No, they didn't. They had instead a triangle. Each article, each box and each jug had a triangle insignia on it, and with three horizontal lines running through the triangle.
Where else did you see that triangle during that period of time?
I saw it on the license plate of a really unusual-looking old car. It was like a 1940 Cadillac. Actually, it looked like a German staff car. It was just so unusual. It looked as if it were brand new, really shiny, and had big extra lights on the front of it, but on the license plate it had this triangle, and it the license plate was black, and it had this red triangle on it.
Wow!
And no other markings on it.
Wow!
So it didn't take a whole lot of figuring to put two and two together, and figure that this car belonged to the men who brought the food that had the same markings on.
Didn't you have a little brush with them briefly?
Yes, I did. I was coming up the stairs one day because the girls lived on a second floor of an apartment building, and I was going up the stairs to visit, and they were coming down at the same time, and they were coming down really fast, and there were three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of abreast, and they were just odd-looking people. They looked kind of like the Blues Brothers. They had hats on like that. They were just unusual-looking, pasty complexions and everything. And it didn't look as if they were going to move, and so I just turned around and backed right down to the landing of the stairs where there would be room for them to pass by. But they were just so unusual-looking. Their clothes, the suits, were like 30 years old or something. You know, they were an old style, I mean.
It almost sounds as if they were from a time warp.
I thought of that recently. It's like that car, too.
Yeah, or perhaps they, you know, were trying to play a role, and they were given these coordinates and that car to use and the clothes to match, and you know, they were 40 years off or something. You know, maybe time in their terms is not quite the same for them as it is for us.
Well, I believe that could be true. In fact, I saw a car just like that. That one about 4 or 5 years ago at a car show here. I really did a double take on it, and it turned out that car had originally belonged to the government, to the Army, too. But at that time, of course, it was a private person. But I really did a double take when I saw that car, because it was as if I was right back there looking at the one with the triangle license plate.
So tell us now. You were in communication with your daughter, Marissa, and you were aware of her new roommate and the strange things. When was the first time you actually met her, and what were your impressions?
The first time I met her, I had gone to see Marissa, and I had been hearing these stories about Rachel, and I had really hoped that she would be there so I could meet her, but turned out that she was gone. But just as I was finally getting to leave, I was standing in the open doorway with my daughter,
mm-hmm.
and we heard somebody coming up the stairs. It turned out to be Rachel, and she went in, passed between us, and didn't say very much.
Uh-huh.
Just said she was in a hurry, and so we had a brief introduction, and I realized right then she didn't sound like ordinary people,
uh-huh.
but at any rate, she hurried in and picked up whatever notes she had come for, and as she came back, just before she got to us, she tripped over something on the floor, maybe the wrinkle in the rug or something, and I could see she was going to fall right straight forward,
huh.
Really just stiff, like she didn't try to catch herself
uh-huh.
or anything, and so I reached out to save her from a fall, and as I did, I grabbed her arm, and the sleeve of her jumpsuit slid up, and I found myself holding on to her arm, and it felt really cool and spongy,
huh.
and the texture was similar to that of mushrooms.
Huh.
It felt almost real, but not quite.
Uh-huh.
And her sunglasses, well, this was another thing. She always wore black real dark wraparound sunglasses indoors and out,
huh.
and she wore a jumpsuit with
uh-huh.
long sleeves and long legs, of course, and a scarf around her head. So anyway, as I was holding onto her arm, I held onto it to stand her back up, and I really couldn't let go of it. I was really in kind of a shock, I guess. But as I was holding it, I realized that her sunglasses had slid way down on her nose, and I'm looking into her eyes, you know, right nose to nose practically.
Oh, my.
And her eyes were a solid light avocado green, like the inside of an avocado.
Huh.
And they were really huge and kind of wrapped around to the side of her temples. And she had vertical black pupils.
Wow.
And it was then that I knew that she was a lot stranger than Marissa had even mentioned.
And, of course, Marissa couldn't see.
That's right.
So it almost sounds as if, and, of course, in retrospect, it does seem as if Marissa was really selected, you know, because of her lack of sight.
It does seem that way, because if she wasn't, it was just a perfect chance accident.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, more of the story unfolds, too, which you weren't aware of right away either. Now, your book begins with the parallel story about the Air Force colonel, Rachel's father,
right.
Or she says he's the father, and his assignment in 1956 to Four Corners, a secret military base in Nevada. What did you find out about his work with extraterrestrials?
Well, after this incident with Rachel, where I realized that she wasn't what she was making herself out to be,
yeah.
A few days after that, the colonel, her father, asked my daughter to set up a meeting with me because he wanted to tell me more about her past and his past.
Uh-huh.
And so we did have that meeting, and he told me how he had been assigned to Four Corners, and his job was to recover any survivors that there might be from any downed craft.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time, the crafts landed successfully, but once in a while, something would go wrong, and we didn't go into that. He didn't go into it. What the problem was. They weren't trying to shoot them down, but there was some sort of a problem with their navigation system that they just didn't always land successfully.
Uh-huh.
But at this one crash, there were three other occupants, and they were all killed on impact. But she was a survivor, and the craft was starting to burn, and when he got to it, and he saw a slight movement inside and went in to investigate, and it was Rachel. And
uh-huh.
He pulled her out, and they got her to the dispensary there at
uh-huh.
Four Corners. Because even a secret base like that has little medical facilities.
Well, I would hope so.
Yes, really, out in the desert, they really needed them. But at any rate, he told me pretty much the whole story, that how he had recovered her, and strangely enough, he wanted to keep her there. And he had never been much around children. He didn't know much about children, certainly not teenage girls, which they figured she was a teenager, probably 13 or 14. She didn't know exactly how old she was, because their concept of time was different from ours.
Right.
Like
right.
You were mentioning, there was the Men in Black, you know. But at any rate, he was given permission to keep her there if he would agree to adopt her and raise her as a human.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty unusual so far, but it continues.
I have to agree with you. It's pretty far-fetched sounding.
Well, you know, I was reading also about the Human Hybridization Project, too.
Yes.
I think that's the name for it. Is that correct?
Well, actually, it was the Humanization
that's
Project.
That's it.
Right, and that was it was sponsored by our government as a black project in conjunction with the beings from Zeta.
Right.
To see how much... what degree of emotions hybrids could acquire.
Uh-huh. Now, the first part of the book weaves a story about, you know, the Colonel, Rachel, and your daughter, and yourself, and your family, which we're going to continue to get into. And the second part it includes transcripts from your hypnotherapy sessions, in which you regress and more information comes out. What more did you begin to find out during those sessions?
I found out exactly what Rachel's hands looked like, for one thing.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, that was not really all that bad or anything, but it was very traumatic, and I'm still not really sure why it was. But it was brought out that as I met her there... as I saw her in the doorway when we were introduced,
uh-huh.
not even when I was holding her arm, it was before that, that her hands had only four fingers.
Uh-huh.
And they were all about the same length. They weren't different lengths like our fingers are.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't look like a thumb as we have. I guess the first finger would have acted as a thumb, but it didn't. It wasn't like ours. And there were no fingernails.
Huh.
And the no fingernails part of it was what still makes me feel just really queasy. And it shouldn't, you know. I've been in the medical field for 30 years, and I've heard of lots worse things than that. But
that was just kind of spooky.
It was.
Huh.
It was.
Well, it is.
Well, yes. And then there was the thing, too, where I had gone to visit my daughter one day, and she hadn't got home from class yet, but Rachel was there, and she kept mentioning that she wished that I could be her mother. And I kept saying, well, I can't be, but I could be your friend.
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, I'm going to take you, I'm going to show you where I come from.
Huh.
And I don't remember, even during the regressions, I don't think I said yes or no or anything. It was almost instantly that I found myself in another location, and I believe that it was on a ship.
Okay.
And I was standing outside a room. Well, I was in a room, but there was then an inner room that was enclosed with rows of windows.
Uh-huh.
And Rachel was on the inside of these windows, and I was on the outside. And she said, well, come in. And I said, well, I can't. There's no door. And she said, well, just put your hand on the window, and I'll put mine on yours on the inside of
uh-huh.
the window, and you can come through. And I did that, and I found myself going through the window.
Wow.
And then it was on the inside.
Huh.
And it was a really strange feeling, kind of wavy and elongated,
huh.
going through.
Uh-huh.
But then on the other side, I came back together again, normal form.
Uh-huh.
And so then inside of that room, there was an inner room, and that had rows of incubators. They looked like aquariums, really, stacked about three high all around the room. And I looked at those things that were inside of them, and they were floating around in kind of a greenish, brackish-looking water,
mm-hmm.
or liquid, I mean. And they were fetuses in different stages of development.
Hmm.
And I expressed how I felt to Rachel. I didn't want to stay in that room. They made me feel nauseated. They were just really bad looking.
Yeah.
And she indicated that they wanted me to stay and help take care of those.
Huh.
And I said, I can't do that. I won't. I have a job, and I have to go back and take care of Marissa. And she said, well, that's all right. We'll give you another job. And then she said, we will have, you can be an educator. And again, I had an answer. Well, I have no credentials. I don't know why I'm so practical. I'm not talking with another human being, you know. But anyway, she said, you don't need credentials. You will tell this story.
Wow.
And this was what came out under hypnosis.
Uh-huh.
And I'm laughing as I'm saying all this under hypnosis. And then the truth struck me. Of course, I'm not a credentialed teacher or anything, but I am educating people as to what happened to me and what has happened to a lot of other people.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have to just give you high praise for having the courage to come out like this and help others like myself and the world begin to open our minds and step out of denial and join our family in reaching for the stars and realize that, you know, we've got more family that we haven't met yet.
Oh, yes. And there are so many people. Well, they haven't certainly had the exact same experiences that I have,
mm-hmm.
but they've had some face-to-face encounters,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's just been a sighting from quite a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to people to be able to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, they know what they saw, but until they really can tell somebody and not be ridiculed,
yes.
and laughed at,
yes.
and you know, they're not looking for answers. I don't really think that the people, I know the people that I have talked to are not looking for answers when they tell me what has happened to them.
Right, right.
They just want acceptance, I guess.
Right, and you know, that's the least we can give each other, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, when unusual things happen to people, you know, a lot of times we don't question them, but this kind of subject, it really needs to come out and be shared from the heart so that, you know, we realize that there are some strange things going on, but we can deal with it.
That's right.
We can deal with it.
And that is an important thing, too, that I meant to mention. It's so critical for them to realize that they're all right. They're
yes.
not insane.
Yes.
They haven't gone over the edge. And it's just as important, and perhaps more so, that they use care, though. Once they have talked to someone
uh-huh.
like me or to a therapist or someone, they have to really then be careful that they don't start talking to everybody about it.
Right, right.
I mean, there are certain people that you can talk about, but in some cases your neighbors will look at you funny or
yes.
not have much to do with you. Or
if you can lose your job for telling your own truth.
Yes, you can, and that's so unfortunate.
It is. It's very unfortunate.
Well, yes.
that's why we're talking about it tonight. Now, there's not all of your experiences. You found out that you were part of this, too, and that your family was part of it, which seems to be a common factor, you know, when there's one person who's been taken or abducted, that often the parents and grandparents and maybe even beyond that have all had those experiences.
Oh, yes.
One part of your story disturbs me and it puzzles me. Now, you had a pregnancy before Marissa was born, and you saw a female doctor who had a thick German accent. Is that right?
Yes.
And then there was another woman dressed very nicely in like a gray suit or something.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Those were not aliens, were they? They sound like human. They sound like us working with closely with some other group.
I believe so. Both of them, as far as I know, were real humans. The doctor in particular, well, I'm quite sure that she was, because
yeah.
She worked at a hospital and had her own private practice in a town that I lived in.
Uh-huh.
I'm really sure about her, but she was strange, though. But I don't think she was non-human.
Okay.
But I don't know.
So your visits to that doctor weren't ones that were made in after you'd been picked up by the ship, right?
No.
Okay.
They were before.
Okay.
Quite a few years before.
There's a different account that includes a lot of information similar to yours, and that person describes being in an enormous room of babies that were not crying or squirming, all with blonde hair and blue eyes. And I just wondered if you think there could possibly be a connection here between all the Germanic elements and the blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids.
Oh, possibly.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Ah, yes, that certainly could be.
Yes, yes. There may be more to, that German leader's madness than meets the eye.
There well could be. Now, this woman, I was very young. Let's see, I haven't thought about it in this context before, but I guess I was about 20 or 21 years old, about 20. And this woman was, at that time, she was in her 50s at least.
Uh-huh.
So there could have, I'm thinking about the time element, about the German leader.
yeah.
And what connection there could have been, and it could have been.
And not only that, but I do know, it's common knowledge, that there was a Project Paperclip in which our government, after the Germans were defeated, imported the scientists from Germany and installed them in black operations all over the place.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, we can only guess what's going on there. But let's stay focused on what we have here. Your description of the colonel and the various projects that he had been involved with, he seems like a really, really wonderful man. You know, what's your impression of him, and what more did you find out about him?
I thought, too, that he was a really nice man.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
My daughter liked him. And he just seemed very down to earth and very caring about Rachel.
Yeah,
very concerned for her welfare, as as I learned afterwards, he certainly had good reason to be.
Yeah.
But he was unusual in that, as he told me about his background and how he had acquired Rachel, we started out just talking face to face in the apartment. And before long, I found myself with this tremendous download of information in my mind, and not very much time had gone by. It was as though I had only been there maybe, I don't know, 3/4 of an hour at the most.
Mm-hmm.
But I had all this information, and there's no way in the world that he could have told me all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not in the depth that he went into,
mm-hmm.
not in that length of time. I mean, I know what time I went, and I know what time I left to go home.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that seems to be another common factor, too, with that particular form of communication, the telepathic communication, is that great quantities of information are downloaded like packets. And didn't you say that part of his job in the beginning, and starting in the 1950s, and throughout his career, was to communicate telepathically with these Zetas?
Yes.
That were researching. So he and they were close friends.
Right. And he, the one that I mentioned in the book, actually the only one that I knew the name of and eventually met, Chisky, he
yes.
could speak, but his speech was sort of like Rachel's. It was just very mechanical, and it was difficult for him to speak verbally, but he and the colonel spoke at length of daily by through telepathy.
So it's not at all inconceivable that both Rachel had, you know, even possibly transported you elsewhere and had downloaded also a great deal of information, as did he.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. And I still sometimes have flashbacks where little bits and pieces will come to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not anything much, but occasionally something that I was in a little bit of question about during the regressions, or as I could consciously remember, it would just fall into place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I have to say one thing, that before I picked up your book, I had a little bit of, oh, shall we say, subtle hostility towards our government and the way that they've operated in such secrecy. And I have to admit that, you know, the way that you've written this really opened my eyes, and I developed a great deal of compassion for those who have to work in secret projects. And I actually found myself really wanting to meet these people. You know, I thought it would be so wonderful if we were able to just be open and truthful about this stuff and come out and share it.
If we just could. I don't know the reasons that they give for, our government gives, or the media anyway,
right.
gives for not doing it, as well, people couldn't stand it. It would just wreck organized religion, and, you know, it goes on and on. People would just riot and
right.
revolt and on and on, and all of those excuses don't really carry a lot of weight when you examine them very closely.
No, I don't think so either, and I think that that's part of an old paradigm that probably a few core people that are involved with these projects just simply haven't begun to connect with the reality that's out there now, not unlike some of our leaders around the world today.
Well, yes, we see examples all the time.
Yes. Oh, yes, we do.
Well,
I think there was one last night on television.
Yes, there was. And there probably more over the weekend or first
yes,
next week.
Yes, almost nightly we get a dose of that.
But, you know, there is the thing, too, about covering it up for all of these years, and
yes.
people really would want to know, well, why did you lie to us all this time?
Right.
And why
right.
did you kill some of the people that are, not people, but the entities that,
right.
that came to visit us? Why did you just kill them and not even give them a chance?
Right.
You know,
right.
I think there would be a lot of questions raised about that, but still, they would not be to that extent. It would quiet down.
I think so, too. And, you know, I really have to recommend that we, you know, unless our own lives are in perfect condition, that, you know, when this information does start to surface, as it is surfacing, there's a disclosure project that Dr. Stephen Greer heads up.
Oh, yeah.
Art Bell's radio show has lots of information, and Whitley Strieber has written a number of wonderful books on the subject. And,
yes,
and of course, your book is just blew me away. But I think we really need to give up our finger-pointing and our accusations and allow what is to just be what it is and not expect, you know, a lot of condemnation. I think we need to forgive and allow all of us to move forward and just say, well, that's just the way it was. Those were the times. Let's let it go. Let's move forward and see where we can take this from here now.
There's way too much of this, well, but it was like this, and
right.
living in the past, and as you say, we need to go forward. And then there's another thing, too. There are these, well, they're called different names, indigo children or
yes, the crystals.
Star seeds. Yeah, and Dr. Richard Boylan, who wrote the foreword to my book,
yes,
he's really working on the Star Kids project, and there are children like that.
Oh, yes.
And there's young adults. I've seen children that, well, I don't know for a fact that they are Star Kids, but I would certainly say they were awfully different.
Absolutely. Yes, in fact, I'm in Dr. Boylan's group, and I read the posts, and I'm in communication with other groups too that work with Star Kids. So it's a very big phenomenon, and I've been studying the indigos now for quite a few years, and I finally came to the realization that I probably am an older indigo myself.
Oh yes, I think I am too.
Oh, definitely. Now, we could talk for hours, but I don't want our listeners to be left out in the cold.
No.
And not find out what did you discover about who, well, okay, let's go back just one second. Now, when your daughter found out about Rachel, what happened then? Rachel left.
Yes. She came home from class one noon, my daughter did, and to discover that Rachel's possessions were gone. It was a furnished apartment, so the bed and the dresser and,
yeah,
you know, chair were still there, but everything else was gone, and she was really in a panic.
Uh-huh.
So she looked around, and she saw a note taped to the mirror on,
uh-huh,
the dresser, and she took it down and read it, and it said, that Rachel said that she hated to leave, that my daughter was a really good friend, but she had left her a gift. And my daughter sat there on the bed with the mattress there with the note in her hand for several minutes before it dawned on her what the gift was.
Uh-huh.
She had read the note, and she had up to that time been almost totally blind, and she couldn't read anything without her magnifying glass.
Wow.
But she didn't have the magnifying glass, and she had read the note.
Wow.
And
that's so beautiful.
It really is. And she didn't get full sight back, but
yeah,
it was considerably improved, so I thought that it was quite a nice gift. But at any rate, she was very upset, and she called me at work at a military installation that I worked at.
Uh-huh.
And I immediately called a friend who worked in security and told him the situation. And I had previously talked to him about the strangeness of Rachel, and he had checked on her and her father, mainly the father, before, and discovered where he had worked, or corroborated that he had been at Four Corners and was involved in rescue.
Uh-huh.
And so, anyway, I called him again and told him what had happened, that Rachel had disappeared, and asked him if he would check and see if her father was still around, if maybe we could trace him. I could check and see what had happened. So he called right back, and he said, "It's a big surprise here. All of his records have disappeared. It's like he never existed."
Yes, the old disappearing trick.
Right.
And, of course, Rachel never was a student at the school, and her records were all gone, and so on and so forth.
Right, but towards the end of everything, I did get a letter signed by the dean of students that Rachel had attended,
yes,
school, and up until that time, it was another brick wall. They didn't have any records, nothing. It was as if she hadn't existed, even though I know that she did, and
yeah,
there were several people that knew her as classmates.
Yeah. You know, your daughter is such a beautiful soul. I mean, she was going blind, and she was so kind to other people, and she was always had feeling for the underdog, and one of the things that she said was to never give up, even in the midst of blindness. If you believe in yourself, you can do anything. And
mm-hmm,
she was quite an inspiration for many people, wasn't she?
She was, and she has been for me, too, even after her passing. You know, I kind of went into a slump. I knew that she was not going to live to an old age because she was a childhood diabetic, and they usually don't.
Yeah.
But when it happens, it really just knocks you out in left field.
Yeah.
But I keep in mind all of her little sayings, like she used to say, just do whatever it takes, Mom.
Yeah.
Or another thing she used to say, and it seems to have a lot of meaning in regard to this UFOs and extraterrestrial situation, that there are a lot of layers after layers.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, well, yeah, there are. But how true it is when you start checking out this information, one thing just leads to another and another.
Yes, and just for our audience so that they aren't left hanging, your daughter died of natural causes around in the 1990s, I believe?
Yeah, in 1990.
And then you found out through, I think, through psychic means what happened to Rachel. She did not die of natural causes.
That's right. She was partly as a result of her friendship with my daughter, that she had acquired a little more human emotion than was hoped for in the experiment.
Wow.
In the project. And so they disposed of her by...
She was terminated.
Yep, she was terminated, and they pushed her down a flight of stairs.
Wow. I just felt for her so much. I just wanted to hug her and say, you know, you can take your glasses off. You can.
Yeah, it's all right.
I know. She's just such a wonderful creature, you know. Why we can't just embrace all creatures, you know? Well, that's the direction that I see that we can go in, and I think we need to consider going in very soon. Now, you just mentioned the layers that get unraveled. You found out that there was even a deeper relationship between your daughter and Rachel, didn't you?
Yes. I really think that during my visit to the German doctor,
mm-hmm.
and with that lady with a gray suit that had taken me there,
mm-hmm.
They had removed, I had been pregnant at that time, and they did do what I think now was a D&C
mm-hmm.
on me, and I believe that the embryo that they removed was to become Rachel.
Yes.
I think that.
Yeah, so that's exactly what I thought when I was reading your story, too. So that would make, and it gets even more complicated because you actually came about as a result of your mom and your aunt?
Yes.
So
yes,
you're...
the woman I thought, for years until, probably about 20 years ago, I discovered that she was not my mother after all, that the woman I had considered my aunt was really my mother. That was really hard for me to bear because here we go with the layers again.
Yes.
We had layers and layers of lies.
Yes.
All of those years, and I was denied knowing, but I always wondered why my aunt treated me so special, and my mother never showed me a bit of love.
Yes.
I thought, well, it was the way she was. Well, which was true, but
But there were some underlying things that didn't come out until years later.
That's right, and only a few years ago, I've been in contact with my real mother, and she had told me about her childhood,
mm-hmm.
where there were a lot of kids, I think there were 9 or 10 in the family, and she would tell me, when the lights would come and the house would just rattle. Well, this was in upper New York State, and it wasn't an earthquake because they don't have them there.
Uh-huh.
And it's happened quite frequently, too. She said, my mother would get all us kids up and get us dressed, and we would all go outside and see the ships.
Wow.
And so I asked her, well, did you ever go inside the ships? And she said, well, I don't want to talk about that. It's so hard to remember. But she remembered a lot of details until I got to that question.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know.
Interesting. And, of course, your first contacts were around the age of 10, 11, 12, and 13, yes?
Right.
And the voice. Oh, tell us about the blue light. I know it's not a special at Kmart.
Oh no, I didn't have any sale connected with it.
No.
You mean the original blue light that I saw when I was very young. Yes, I used to ride my horse back in the woods. I had a little private place back there that was just really peaceful and nice, and I would go back there and take a book and read, tie the horse up, and I would sit back there and read. But it came out in the regressions that there was a blue light that also came to visit me while I was back there.
Mm.
And it asked me, but I don't think in words. I think this was telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
It would ask me on several different occasions, did I want to have a baby? Well, I was 9 or 10 or whatever.
You're right.
And I didn't want to have a baby. I wasn't, you know, I'd never been even around very many babies at that age. And so I said, no, I have to go to school. I always had a lot of really good answers for these beings. So anyway, they said, well, that's all right. That's all right. We can wait. And in another instance, it asked me the same thing, and I said no again for the same reasons. And they said, well, that will be all right, but when you do, it will look like you, but it will be like us.
Wow.
And so I'm not sure. I think that's tied in with the German doctor and extraction of the embryo.
Yes.
And Rachel and the two girls meeting. Maybe I'm just putting it together because it sounds good. I think it sounds truthful.
It does. It sounds truthful to me. And that miscarriage wasn't the only one you had. You had three or four, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Now, you also have two boys. I don't want to leave them out of the mix here.
No.
Do you feel that they're involved in, I mean, they have to be in some way. Do they feel a little bit left out in the shadow of Marissa?
No, not really. The oldest one had met Rachel. In fact, he went out on a date with her.
Oh, really?
He's really concerned about what could have happened on that date.
Oh, my.
He remembers absolutely nothing.
Really?
He met her. Well, his sister set the date up. So he remembers Marissa and her boyfriend and Rachel and him in the apartment, and all of a sudden he remembers absolutely nothing. His mind is a complete blank, and it's making him crazy. He just can't recall. And they weren't drinking.
No,
either.
No.
That wasn't it.
No.
But I don't know what happened, and he has no idea. I think he needs really to be regressed.
Yes,
to get
it
to
sounds
the bottom
that way.
Of it. No matter what happened, he'll feel better to know.
Yes, absolutely. That is such an important thing to remember, that, you know, when it comes to a choice between knowing and not knowing, it cannot help us to stuff and remain in denial about information that is just information. It's so much better to know.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you, how can any of the listeners know if they've been abductees and where they can find help towards understanding, and getting help that's compassionate?
I would advise seeking out a therapist if they have the money. A lot of people don't have the money to do that.
Yes.
But sometimes you find people a therapist that will do this for free. Now, Dr. Steiner did. She donated all her services to me, and I had a lot of regressions. I had probably 15 of them. But we couldn't put too much in the book.
Oh, they were fascinating. The ones that you did get in there were riveting.
Well, some of the others are too.
You'll have to come out with a sequel, I think.
I'm considering that.
Speaking of that, have you had any difficulties coming out with the book in terms of military or men with black hats, you know, the men in black and so on?
I've had a couple of visits by people. They looked to be paranormal, and they showed up in the neighbor's driveway, positioned in their vehicle so they could look in my kitchen window.
Oh, okay.
And this was witnessed by my older son, too, and it scared him just really badly. And at first, I was a little frightened, too, and then I was really angry because I realized what they were there for. They showed up at a time when I was not really sure if I was going to go ahead with the book and finish it or just give it up, and for just different reasons.
Right,
and, when I saw them there with that visit, that made up my mind for me. Yes, I am going ahead with it. But, you know, they stared in through the window, and it was such a strange circumstances. It was a cloudy, overcast morning, about 8:30 or 9 in the morning, and they, too, were wearing the dark wraparound
suit. Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh.
And they were dressed in kind of military fatigues.
Huh.
But somehow they just didn't look right, and their vehicle had several different things wrong with it. It was supposed to be a normal-looking van, but there were some things that weren't right. The license plate, for one thing, was wrong. It was too large for a government license plate, had one too many letters and numbers, and there were, it was just off a bit. So I guess that I would know who they were.
Given everything you've been through and the pain and the oddness of these experiences, what is your gut feeling about what's happening globally as far as these abductions go and the hybrid process? Do you feel like it's a benevolent program, or is it are we being saved or manipulated? What's going on?
Well, for one thing, I do think we're being manipulated.
Well, yes.
There's really not any question about that.
Yes, yes.
But, and I don't know if we're being saved. It seems that a lot of people are being convinced not to come forward with their experiences.
Yeah.
And yet some of them, like me, have almost been helped along in various ways.
Yeah.
And these guys that paid me the visit and stared through the window, they weren't very, they didn't go into too much depth there.
Yeah.
They could have knocked on the door and taken us or something.
Yeah.
You know, but it was, I think that experiences like that other people have had, I think it's just to let us know that, yes, there is something out there and we should believe in it. We should be really careful.
Yes.
What we do and
yes.
how we go about it.
Yes.
But we should go ahead and not let people talk us out of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But they do show up almost and try to intimidate you almost to see if you're really serious about
mm-hmm.
it, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But
no, I have a feeling that because your book and your story is being allowed to come out, because basically if they didn't want it out, it wouldn't be out.
Oh, sure.
That, you know, we hopefully will see more truth coming out in this direction so that we can all embrace it together instead of, you know, I think basically we just want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time, and I want you to tell our audience how they can get your book.
Okay. They can go to fifthworld.com, and that's 5thworld.com, and order it through there. Or Amazon.com.
Okay.
Or there's an 800 number.
Okay, what is that?
That is 800-366-0264.
And that information, by the way, folks, is also on the bio page, which I put up for this show, and it'll be up for a few more days now. So if you didn't get that over the airwaves, just click on this show, and you'll see the description of what you know of the book, and the information on ordering, and the toll-free number is there. And just to make sure we got the toll-free number, that was 800-366.
0264.
0264.
And if people wanted to contact me as experiencers, I'd be happy to talk to them. I can give you my website.
Oh, wonderful.
I mean,
what is that?
That is Helen Fifth World, 5th World, at AOL.com.
Well, you know, I didn't even have that myself.
Well, I know it. I just thought of it that it hadn't been included.
Well, that's wonderful.
But I'd be happy to talk. If people wanted to talk to me, I'd be happy to talk to them. I can't give people any answers.
Right.
I'm willing to listen to you.
Right. That is wonderful. Well, Helen, thank you so much for what you're doing to bring this information to the light. Thank you for sharing your story. It moved me to tears. It entertained me. I feel like you're a relative.
Oh, maybe we are.
I know. I thought about that. Maybe we met in a test tube somewhere.
Well, you know, anything is possible.
I'm beginning to see that.
Oh, and I thank you so much, Lance. This has been wonderful.
Oh, wonderful.
This.
And thank you, audience, for listening. And this is a Fireside Chat. Lance White signing out, and stay tuned for Liz Miller's show, which is an excellent show. You'll love her. Thanks again, Helen, and good night, everybody.
Good night.